Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesen Fire, Maryland's 5/8 Mile Training Track completes the full-service facilities. From the folding barn to the racetrack, join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing?
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is running like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You showed me how to do exactly what you do, how I fell in love with you. You walk into a room and people fall for you, how I wanna be like you.
We're back at the races. We're back at Oaklawn Park. And what a just impromptu, that's why coming to the racetrack and going on site is just invaluable and an experience that just can't be quantified or explained. Randy Moss wanders into a press box that he's frequented for decades, since his childhood, and it turns into just a an Oaklawn festival of pretty legendary proportion. Sandy Montgomery on hand, who has had and seen as much as any racetracker. Ron Moquette, who seems like somebody that was potentially reincarnated, because Moquette is completely immersed in the lore and the history of the game. Just so much fun. So thanks to Randy and Sandy and Ron. As Ron said, make it as much of an annual get together as possible. But they're never as good when you try to orchestrate them. They're always better when they just sort of happen. And that's one of the reasons we're so dedicated to coming out to the racetrack. Speaking of dedicated to coming out to the racetrack, joined by Gary Palmisano Jr., G-Pal, who I got to see, of course, in his native habitat, New Orleans, over the past weekend. Gary, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Big. How are you? Good to see you last weekend. You missed. You were missed at our parade celebration on Sunday, but I hope you found a nice spot to soak up some Mardi Gras.
Without a doubt, and then came back, of course, for Monday and Tuesday at the track. I am going to have to come back, and you can. You're probably as good as Al Stahl was to discuss this, but when I left for the track on Tuesday, I was stunned by where everybody was lined up and what they had done on Basin Street from Canal heading up toward Claiborne. And I hadn't expected that. Basically the whole community out with smokers and tents had been erected and so I didn't know if there was another parade there, but Al Stahl explained that it's more of a walking parade at that point with bands and the, you know, the festoon, the big costume parades. I'm going to have to come back for that.
It's crazy. There's just no way around it. I mean, everywhere you turn down there during that weekend and into Tuesday is people just having a good time. And the weather was beautiful, which obviously had a lot to do with it. But yeah, no, it's a true citywide celebration, and everybody kind of does it their own way and kind of has their own tradition. And that's what makes it, such a fun atmosphere down there.
Well, for you, and in your, you know, still fairly new role as racing director for the CDI properties, you're keeping a tab on everything going on, and it's all, of course, all roads will ultimately lead back to Churchill for Derby, but you're down for Risen Star. I'm sure you'll be back for Louisiana Derby, but you're also keeping tabs on what's going on at Turfway Park, and you swung into action off of last week. I won't even call it an uproar, but the consternation of players watching the feed from Turfway and the difficulty of being able to interpret, you know, the winner at the wire because of the angle of the camera, and you and everybody have been trying to come up with some answers and some solutions, and really to your credit, Gary, that you guys reacted as quickly as you have. Tell everybody what the problem has been and how you're hoping to solve it.
Yeah, so I think when the building was built, from what I can assess, sort of, I've only picked up on this over the last few months, but I think the building was built on a bit of an angle, not exactly dead straight on with the track, and it sort of threw off where we put what I'll call the camera shack or whatever on the side of the building. We built a fully enclosed camera, you know, viewing stand. Obviously, they run in the winter, they run at night, so we tried to build them a nice spot that they could be enclosed. They would be out of the elements. The cameras would be protected. So we built it on the side of the building, and I guess the way the angle of the building is, it doesn't align up straight on with the racetrack, which goes, you know, at a little bit different angle. So it was certainly throwing a view of the finish line off a bit. And it was something we noticed and picked up on, you know, earlier on in December. We've had different engineering groups out there to see if we could move that. We had explored moving the cameras to the rooftop, just looking at different angles. And then I got to give the credit to the folks over at International Sound, Joe Gordon and his team that work with a lot of the racetracks around the country, handle the broadcast of Turfway as well as some of our other properties. And they were able to secure us a robotic camera that we could mount on the side of the building and kind of, you know, throw out a different angle, which we tried last night, and I feel like it was a good solution. So what you'll notice is the regular pan shot will show the race, and then as soon as the gallop out is complete, they will flip to a slow-mo camera that's sort of mounted on the side of the building, but at the correct angle to catch the wire straight on. And that's what we used last night, and saw some positive comments from folks on Twitter. And I think we'll use that moving forward until we can figure out a longer term solution.
Well, and that is just the fact that you heard the concerns and the complaints and the frustrations, and really it's this is a topic that, you know, that gets, you know, more or less bubbles to the surface, you know, on a regular basis, and not unique to Turfway. A lot of it just has to do with configurations and also placements of wires and the way the camera angles are presented. But if this can make it, you know, easier, and if players get a clearer view of, you know, who's hitting the wire in front, that goes a long way. And I just thought it was great that I brought this up with you the other day, and you said you were working on it. He said they're trying to figure out what they can do to make it better, and that's all anybody asks, Gary. So that this is really nice to be responsive and to try to make sure that players get the view that they want.
Yeah, no, totally. And, I'd venture to guess there aren't many more people out there that watch as much Turfway racing as I do. I've been extremely proud of what our team there has been able to accomplish and the quality of racing. And this was something that, we wanted to address and wanted to get right. And we'll continue to look at, longer term solutions. But in the interim, I think this is at least a good opportunity, to your point, to allow people to see a slow-mo replay directly on the wire. That sort of can alleviate all doubt. The photo finish camera is smack dab on the wire. There's no doubt that the integrity of the race is safe with the photo finish. But that camera angle, the way it was certainly putting off a different view, and we wanted to go ahead and get that done. And again, the team at International Sound secured us the right equipment, and we're off and running.
That's tremendous. I'm glad. You said yesterday that you wanted to see how the test went, and so that's exciting that it's going to provide that kind of immediate immediate view that if it pops up in somebody's mind, if there's uncertainty, they'll get a really viable view almost immediately after the race. Very cool. Well done.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it and appreciate your venturing down to New Orleans there. And I hope you enjoyed your time.
Fun
weekend of racing. And I think the over-under that Kevin Kirstein cashed on me of 9 pounds of crawfish over the weekend, I did hit the over. So the over cashed in the press box in Louisville.
Where did you go for crawfish? I haven't talked about my crawfish experience yet.
There's a little place not too far from my house there in Bucktown called Schaefer's, and that's my usual go-to. Picked up 12 pounds when I was there, and we had my in-laws down there, and they ate about three of them, so I couldn't let they ate about three crawfish. I couldn't let the rest of them go to waste, so...
Well, there was, and did I take a picture? I don't even think I took a picture. I wanted to go for lunch the other day, and there was a place I've been wanting to try in Mid-City, and now I'm going to forget the name, Meat. Oh, my God. But anyway, they were closed, so it didn't matter. But right next door was this Bayou Beer Garden.
Okay, yeah.
Well, okay. In the back, you could go into the main, the stairs into the restaurant and bar, but they had a tent in the back. And so I was like thinking, I just said, what's going on back here? And they were doing a crawfish boil, and I guess they do it all during the crawfish season. And I'll tell you, they were bigger, because I know it's fairly early on in the season, right? I mean, it February to May?
Yeah, exactly. Traditionally, you can sort of get them in January. It's all weather dependent, really, and I think they've had a pretty mild winter down there, so... they've certainly got them in a little bit earlier, but yeah, traditionally for us, Mother's Day is like the big end of the year, festive, crawfish boil time. And then they sort of tail off, after that.
Well, the Bayou Beer Garden and the tent, sort of in between, they have an outdoor garden, and then they slapped this tent up, and they're boiling nonstop. And the way they were measuring it out, they were using like a Bud Light plastic, plastic bucket, probably a bucket that'll hold six beers. And
yeah.
he literally, must have had the catch weight on the tear weight, and a certain scoop, about two-thirds of the bucket, and then pouring it into a clamshell where there were like three potatoes and a corn. And there had to be, I mean, it was a joke. I mean, I couldn't eat more than 20 or so. There was enough. There literally was enough for three people, and it was $18 for it was crazy.
Can't beat it.
No,
it's a great city. I enjoy getting down there, and I hear you're making another trip down there in the next week or so.
Yeah, HBPA.
We'll be looking forward to hearing sort of where you venture to on your next go around.
Well, and my problem is I venture to really a lot of the same places. Although the good news is, I know on Tuesday night I've been drafted into Neil's trip to Brightson, so I'll finally be.
Oh,
able,
wow.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that with Neil Pessin. I gave everybody the recap of my trips to Angelo Brocato's. I made three trips to Brocato's, which is the greatest. As big an ice cream fan as I am, Brocato is right up there. I am going to California on Sunday, so we'll be over at Fossilman's in very short order next week. But Brocato is as good as anywhere. What are your other favorite pushes in New Orleans?
If you're at Brocato, hopefully you swung into Venezia's right there next door. Venezia's is top notch. It's Italian pizza place right there next to Brocato, and that's a good little spot. And then I think GW Finn's is the best restaurant in the city if you're looking for something upscale and in your downtown. But you really just can't go wrong in the different places around there. You must have been trying to get to either Piece of Meat or Parkway Bakery when you were stumbling around the Bayou Beer Garden right there.
I love it, because I can't remember if I've ever asked you on air for your New Orleans favorites.
Yeah, no, there's plenty. So, You're in the right spots.
I love it.
I would never expect Neil Pessin to take you down a poor food path in New Orleans. So,
well, I did make it in the Marigny to Houdat Coffee Cafe, which I love for the Johnny Cake. They do the Not Your Mama's Corn Cakes. I go every Risen Star morning and have
there
them.
You go.
They had a limited, you know, one thing that I had not thought of because of Mardi Gras. Some of the restaurants actually had limited menus. They had special Mardi Gras menus.
Yeah.
I also, in Mid-City, I found a place on Sunday morning. I wanted to go someplace new, and I found a place called Katie's.
Katie's Surfer Bar.
Yes.
Just around the corner from the Grant Forrester Mardi Gras party festivities. That's a stop for a lot of racetrackers that live in that area. Very, very good spot.
Katie's was very good. I had the Cochon au lait Benedict, you know, which basically is, you know, pulled pork from a suckling pig, was out of this world. And it's funny, Grant, I saw that when I tweeted it, I saw that Grant liked it.
He's right in that area. That's his stomping grounds where the Monday Risen Star crawfish boil, annual crawfish boil, was held. We have those yearly landmarks and celebrations down there that everybody knows. You know, there's just certain things that you do when you're down there all winter, and going to Grant's crawfish boil is one of them.
Joined by Gary Pomisano Jr. and to redirect it back to the to Gary's new job as vice president of racing, director of racing for all the properties. I'm trying to get Tyler Wissman. I've been wanting Tyler to visit anyway because of his new Thoroughpace project and product that he's offering, and we're going to get that in. But he wrote a terrific thread that you right away, again, you know, having Gary in this job, one of the things that horse players in particular really have advocated for and have hoped for is having contemporaries basically in the executive suite, Gary. And so to have somebody that grew up on the racetrack and who understands the gambler and understands all the working parts, the horseman's needs, you know, having you in this position is really a positive lightning rod for these kinds of topics. And you saw right away that that this discussion that Tyler started about potential, you know, adjustments, and you know, Tyler's a very thoughtful young guy and loves the game and is committed to it. So I thought your reaction and you getting involved in that discussion, that's also a positive.
Yeah, our team sort of meets, we actually met 2 weeks ago and just kind of took a deep dive at what we did last year, what worked, what didn't work, and what we could look at next year. And I, to your point, I enjoy playing the races. I grew up on the racetrack. That's what I know and love. And I'm always appreciative of folks like that take the time and to think about, you know, well thought out new ideas and new opportunities. So I just wanted to follow along and see what some folks were saying. And there's a couple things on there that we've dipped our toes into before. You know, I think a little bit of the challenge with some of the things like head-to-heads and whatnot is there's just so much noise around Derby. Trying to cut through, noise with a brand new wager that takes some explanation, and you can't just pick up your past performances and see how it works. It does get tough to try to get super creative, and some things do take a few years to sort of catch on. I think we're seeing that with the $2 two-day pick six that we did. So looking to tinker with that a little bit. We're constantly wanting to learn and listen and understand what folks are looking for. But there are just some operational challenges. My tote guy out at Churchill, every time we come up with some new idea, he's like, I'm just trying to price the Kentucky Derby. I just want to focus on that. So we boggle his mind a little bit with all the different things that we try to do around Derby. And it's an intense time in the tote room, and they have a lot going on. So some of these wagers that take manual checking and manual pricing and things of that nature sort of scare us a little bit, but again, I appreciated Tyler's commentary, and I follow the thread to just see what people have to say out there.
One of the most interesting discussions that's bubbled to the surface in the last few years, you know, the advent of the 50-cent increment that at first was hailed as, you know, as a terrific addition to betting menus. Particularly for the larger multis, the pick fours and pick fives. And then came the reaction. And this is actually a dual discussion, because it also can tie in, and you can use as a similar example the development of the super high five, a $1 super high five as a reaction. This came out of focus groups at Santa Anita in reaction to the 10-cent super. Essentially, superfecta players felt disenfranchised by the advent of the 10-cent super. They said, you know, you've made it. You know, the ability for people to cover unlimited combinations has kind of ruined the bet for us. You know, we were using the $1 super as almost like a pick six when it came to, you know, looking for big scores. And so the super high five came out of that. The same thing, essentially, Gary, the same conversation grew out of focus groups. I think a lot of it was the Breeders' Cup focus groups that involved Paul Matisse and other players. And the concern that the 50-cent increment had essentially lowered the bar in terms of hitability, and thereby limiting, you know, the breadth of the score. It now, you know, in 50-cent pick fives or pick fours, it now takes a real outlier. It takes, you know, like, well, like what we saw actually on Saturday at Fairgrounds. It took, you know, pretty monumental upsets in the Rachel Alexandra and in the Risen Star for the payoffs to, you know, to really be considerable. What has been your thoughts and what is the discussion points about the increased minimum suggestions that we're hearing and that were included in Tyler's ideas?
We constantly look at it. I can tell you that by far and away the most hotly contested debate around the Derby wagering menu is whether or not to do 10-cent or dollar supers. And we've always stayed the course with the dollar super for kind of that exact same reason. It's really the one chance for those guys to hit for $100,000. And there's guys that play $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 superfecta tickets, in the Derby. And we've stayed the course at the dollar increment, for kind of that exact same, you know, philosophy. And I think we're looking to possibly do a couple, higher dollar increment, wagers this year, assuming things get approved by the commission. And we're also looking at that 2-day pick six, and you know, that thing at $2 with six grade ones, including the Oaks and Derby, you know, it's pretty hard to hit for $2. So we're looking at, you know, that a little bit, but that's definitely one of the debates that I don't know if I know the answer to. I mean, I'm a small player with a moderate bankroll. I can't play a $2 pick six. So trying to find an option for everyone is sort of what we're looking to accomplish. And on Derby Day, you know, we have the dollar super and we have the 50-cent try. So feel like we sort of have both groups covered that want to play the Derby, you know, the way they kind of want to play the Derby.
You know, one thing that Tyler threw in there, he utilized the Grand Slam concept, which, of course, Bill Nader developed at Naira years ago before he went to Hong Kong. And the Grand Slam, for those that aren't exposed to it, there are a couple of other venues beside Naira that utilize it. Nader conceived it as essentially an entree bet, an entree multi-race bet for people that wanted to try things like a pick four or a pick five. The pick five really had not proliferated at the time, but the idea of a pick four where all you have to do is pick a horse that hits the board in the first three legs, but then pick the winner of the last leg. And I thought that Tyler's suggestion of the Grand Slam with, of course, the Derby as the anchor leg was interesting because you always get a terrific lead up and generally the same races leading up to the Derby, the way the card unfolds. And he suggested a Grand Slam with a $2 minimum. And that might be a very innocuous place. It would even represent an entree to a higher increment bet for people that are shy about trying the higher increment. So I thought it did kind of a, I thought that was a, it didn't seem to get a big reaction from people, maybe because they don't believe in the Grand Slam as a concept. But I thought that had a lot of merit and would be a good place, you know, and also with an aggressive, you know, price it aggressively, 12%, 15%.
Yeah, certainly one that caught my attention as well. And, you know, that's where it gets into just how do you put a wager out like that cuts through the clutter of the rest of the wagering menu. And we know that Derby Day, you know, focuses on a novice audience that, you know, would require a good bit of explanation on a wager like that. And if they're not playing and the pool isn't liquid enough, then that doesn't, you know, cut the mustard for your hardcore guys that understand the wager, that would jump in. So it's sort of balancing that fine line of doing something like that. And then how do you explain it to 16 million people watching on NBC or, you know, tuning in around the world as to what a Grand Slam is
sandwiched in the middle of the Kentucky Derby Day card.
Interesting. Yeah.
In an effort to you know, build up a pool that gets to a point where it makes it worthy of the guys that know what a true Grand Slam is to dive in. So that's a little bit of the challenge that we face.
Gary, is there a magic number, a critical mass magic number that you generally are looking for in these conversations?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think we've gravitated over the last couple of years. You know, last year we put in that all dirt pick five. Certainly the pick five wager is the hot wager in the market right now. And there's so many races over the course of Derby Day or Derby weekend where folks find a horse that they love and they want to try to take advantage of that opinion. And we feel like if we can string together multi-race wagers that, you know, connect the dots a couple different ways. If you love a horse in the Pat Day Mile, but it's the sixth race on the day, it doesn't connect to the early, it's out of the late with the Derby. Well, now it's involved in an all dirt pick five. So it gives you the opportunity to leverage that opinion across some multi-race wagers that, you know, have the ability to hit. And I think that pool did 600 and something thousand last year. So obviously felt like that was a success. And we certainly just continue to look at different ways to just give people the opportunity to include horses and opinions in sequences that might not straight line across, you know, three, four, five races.
On this topic, and it just occurs to me to ask this because some people scoff at guarantees, but there is a track record of guarantees, you know, guaranteed pool sizes having authentic success, and that they generally work as a means to an end.
Yeah, I mean, we did it this weekend at the Risen Star. I think we guaranteed that pick five at 500 grand, and it did 900. There's certainly an element of risk there. But, you know, on a day like Derby, I think the expectation from folks is that the pools are the biggest they are at any point in time. And, you know, the guarantees might move the needle some, but, you know, folks that day come with what they're going to spend and have an idea of how to spend it. And they understand that those are the most lucrative wagering pools they're going to find all year. And they bet accordingly.
I certainly
echo your thoughts at places like Fairgrounds when you're trying to promote a Risen Star Day or you're trying to promote, you know, Lone Star Million Day or whatever. That is a great opportunity to draw attention to your product.
While I've got you too, and while we're discussing this, some thoughts on where you stand with the future wagers, and I would think that, you know, the upcoming March offering is going to be, you know, speaking of critical mass, you get the opportunity to introduce the Oaks pool and then the, you know, Oaks Derby double betting opportunity, plus there will be the redistributed Baffert horses that are going to be included in the pool for the first time in the next go around.
Yeah, the future wager this year has been interesting, and one I'm sure we're gonna do a deep dive in after the year. You know, this year we expanded the pool to 40 horses, and I'm not sure that's actually resonated into more wagering. I think that the pools have sort of been not necessarily flat, but they aren't exactly growing at the 40 wagering interest level. That I guess we might have been expecting by giving opportunity for more horses, and I think that, you know, some of the sharper folks that I've spoken to, it does diminish the value of the field a little bit, and it does just layer on extra horses that are perceived to be, you know, long shots. So we're gonna do another deep dive of the future wager after this year and just explore how the 40 horse angle worked. And I think you're right, the March pool should certainly be and is certainly usually one of our better pools as kind of the picture comes together. But it's still a little bit unclear enough to where you can find some prices on some horses if you like. that may have made their first prep and ran okay, but you can look to improve, but you can get some value in that March pool. Yeah. Especially with the Oaks pool looks extremely wide open and really interested to see how the Oaks pool shakes out.
Well, and of course, that topic, you know, I'm here at Oaklawn this week, and between, you know, what feels like some very serious, derby candidates leading this field and the Honeybee taking a step toward the fantasy, it does feel like the Phillies in particular have got to flesh themselves out yet. And I know that just because Wonder Wheel got beat doesn't mean that she doesn't, you know, step forward in the next, you know, the penultimate start before Oaks. But it does feel like the Oaks crowd and the Derby too. I mean, they're until Forte comes back in the Fountain. You know, we've got a lot of slots to fill, and people keep saying, "Well, who do you like so far?" I got nobody. I got nothing. I literally am just sort of letting everybody kind of gravitate where they're gravitating. I can't remember a year where I had such a, you know, an ambivalence toward, you know, not having a specific horse that I was excited about tracking toward Derby.
And I think we see that in our future wagers every year. You know, when you have three or four horses that really stand out, you know, people gravitate toward those horses and they bet with a little bit more conviction. And I don't think we're seeing that this year, because I do think there's a lot of question marks around some of the key contenders, and horses haven't made their first start back at three. And, you know, so I think we're seeing some of that in the future wager this year of just, I don't personally have a lean just yet, similar to you. And I think it's hard for some folks to bet with real conviction into some of those future wager pools right now, because the races are extremely wide open.
Well, we've got all the biggest preps, but even some of the, I can just tell by the coverage, Gary, of the lead up here. I mean, talking, what is it, February 23rd, and yet I'm still kind of watching the allowance races and even the maiden races right now for some horses to jump in and make a, you know, make an impact. I mean, look at the reaction to that allowance on Saturday on the Risen Star undercard, right? I mean, that there, nothing says that those horses, whether it was McPeak with Dennington or Caglioso for Cherie DeVoe, they, I mean, just on figures alone, they would have impacted the Risen Star.
Yeah, no, it's a, you know, kind of, we're in a little bit of, and I guess you could say, where there is still plenty of opportunity for a horse to jump up and get good at the right time here and make a splash. There's no doubt. And I don't know what Brad will do with that Bishop's Bay. You know, Brad usually takes a pretty conservative route. He likes to get a couple allowance races into horses before they take on stakes company. But to your point about a maiden that could maybe make a splash, he was awfully impressive.
He was. He's going to have to do, you know, plenty of catching up, and yep, didn't seem like Brad's going to dive right in. But it does seem, especially if you got horses that have made a start or two before breaking their maiden. I mean, horses that have made one start to this point in February, that's asking a whole lot. And those horses, even if they do make Derby, there's not a great track record for those,
nope.
Right?
Agreed. I agree.
You're next. We're just about to got a minute to close out the fun morning here at Oaklawn. Gary Palmisano Jr. has been with us this half hour and talking about the camera work at Turfway and the very quick response to some of the frustrations last week, and we folded in some other topics. We got the Battaglia coming, and we're looking forward ahead. I'm not going to be able to come this year, but it'll be nice to have a building wrapped around the Jeff Ruby, and got a lot of horses. I see more and more names that are turning up on the list, and I suppose that'll be your next Derby prep visit.
Actually, we moved the Jeff Ruby this year to coincide with the Louisiana Derby, so those are both on March 25th
this year. Oh, no!
We will be, you know, we're kind of going to try to own the space on that weekend there and kind of synergize off those two tracks and work together, but you know me, you know where I'll be. I'm volunteering to head back to Louisiana.
Well, then here's another assignment. I hope there's going to be a two-track multi-race wager, maybe a fairgrounds turfway pick four.
That is in discussion. That is headed to the Louisiana Racing Commission for approval shortly. So
boom.
That's part of the gig. We were kicking around a pick five there. That would include the Ruby and the Bourbonette, as well as the Fairgrounds Oaks, the Louisiana Derby, and either the Handicap or the Munez, whatever shakes up.
Awesome.
So that's coming to a wagering menu near you soon.
I love it. G Pal, everybody. Gary Palmisano Jr. doing the work for the horse players inside the office suite at CDI. Gary, thanks so much.
All right, Mr. Big, good seeing you. Thanks again.
Gary Palmisano Jr., answering your questions and making it happen. We had a fun morning. I got to thank, obviously, Gary just now, but the visit here with Jason Milligan stopped by, but Clinton Stewart, and then Randy Moss, like a genie popped up here with Sandy Montgomery and Ron Moquette. And if you missed it, tomorrow morning 6 to 9 or archived and podcast later, you'll enjoy it. Thanks, everybody. Good luck in your playing today. Twin Spires weekend recap tomorrow morning from here at Oaklawn.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit UA-RTIP.org today.
Why in the